Hey everybody, it's Lloyd Spence, and guess what? It's that time of year, my favorite time of year, March Madness. And BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Look, the NBA is also in full swing. College basketball is heating up as the schools make their way to the madness. Listen, the tournament is coming, and so is the $100,000 Bracket Madness contest, as BetOnline is the spot to be for all your bracketology needs. Look, BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website, betonline.ag, or use your mobile device to sign up today. And guess what? You can receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. So go to betonline.ag. BetOnline. BetOnline, your online sports book experts. Tell them the Noisemaker sent you. What up, y'all? It's your boy, Mr. Noise, and I'm trying to tell y'all what's going on with our newest sponsor, eBay. Now, whether rare dead stock or the latest release, find the exact shoe you're looking for. As the original sneaker marketplace, eBay is the place to go to cop the pair you've been eyeing. With eBay's authenticity guarantee, your sneakers are meticulously inspected by independent professional authenticators. A team of experienced sneaker authenticators verifies the box, logo, stitching, and a dozen of other inspection points. And each sneaker also receives an authenticity guarantee tag that includes a digital stamp of authenticity. And it also protects sellers with a verified return process. And for sneaker sellers out there, eBay has eliminated selling fees on sneakers $100 plus, making it free to sell or flip your collection. You can't beat that. So go to ebay.com/sneakers today. That's ebay.com/sneakers today. It's eBay, the world's best destination for discovering great value and unique selection. Tell them the Noisemaker sent you. Hey everybody, it's your boy Lloyd Spence, and I have decided something. I'm going to dominate 2021. As soon as 2020 ended, I took a good look in the rearview mirror and said, man, f*** you. 2021 for me is all about self-care and self-love, which means I'm focusing on being happy and feeling relaxed. Mental clarity is the first step to my better life, which is why I've been taking down Sunday scary CBD gummy bears like candy. When my mind starts racing or I need to decompress, I simply pop two gummies and in 20 minutes, I'm in max relax mode. Listen, I had the opportunity to take these and I am thrilled. They are really the perfect thing to just kind of take and pop in at the end of your day and kind of settle you down and get you right where you need to be. And there's no risk to buy. The company offers 100% lifetime money back guarantee. And if the product's not for you, that's okay. You'll get your money back. Sunday Scaries is in the stress relieving business, not the stress causing business. So I got you a 25% off to prove it. Visit SundayScaries.com and use my promo code BELIEVE, BLEAV, for your discount. That's promo code BELIEVE, BLEAV, for 25% off at SundayScaries.com. They're amazing and you won't regret joining their squad.
You are now listening to Believe in the ACC with my husband, Mr. Talkin' Noise, Lloyd Spence, and our brother, Heisman Trophy and Florida State legend, Charlie Ward. And now, Lloyd and Charlie. Go get 'em, fellas.
It really is a brotherhood. So we got like several brothers in this thing. It's not just like Charlie. It's like Charlie and Kendrick Haskins. And, you know, it's just a big old family. We're all going to camp out in that audio media room that Charlie's in with. And cook s'mores or something. I don't know. What's up, guys? Y'all doing all right?
Yes.
Good, man. Just waiting to eat popcorn over at Charlie's house.
I know. And if you're watching us by Facebook or YouTube right now, you see this beautiful media room that Charlie's in that we're all going to go hang out in at some point. I don't know. What's the first thing on the screen is what I want to know.
There is a popcorn maker in their room. Just anyone.
But I'm contractually obligated to only eat popcorn world, so I just have to bring some with me or something.
We just take a bag and dump it in the popcorn maker.
Yeah. Or just order some tins and just dump it in there and act like it's popcorn or something. Well, guys, listen. I mean, the stage is set. We don't have to wonder who's in the Final Four anymore. It is clear. On both sides, on the men's side, we have a clear picture of what is going on. And also on the women's side, we have a very clear picture of what's going on. So we will jump into that. But before we jump into what is going to happen, we should probably talk about what did happen. And I don't know about you. I thought as a whole, the Elite Eight was somewhat anticlimactic. Like, it wasn't like it was really no shockers. It was just like, okay, yeah, that's about what you thought was going to happen. Until the last game of the night, of course. Then that one was extremely shocking. But we can run through it real quick. For those who decided, I'll wait this out, or my team's out and I don't want to watch it. It was a great two games, I thought. Or four games. Is it two games or four games? Four games. Yeah. So we watched on Monday. Was that Monday? I'm so confused by my days right now. It's just like everything's
on. It's just weird that the tournament's been played on Monday.
Yeah, it's throwing me off. It's throwing me completely off. Okay. So
live on Monday on the show.
Right, Monday we watched the games live. That's exactly right. Exactly right. So we watched Arkansas and Baylor go at it, and Baylor punched their ticket in an 81-72 win, and Houston punched their ticket in a 67-61 win. And then last night we watched Michigan punch their ticket. No. I'm sorry, not Michigan. UCLA punched their ticket over Michigan. And we watched Gonzaga, who probably had their ticket punched before the tournament even started, go ahead and finish off the their Elite Eight win. So, most impressive thing that you saw in those four men's games, we'll get to the women's side here in a minute, but on the men's side, what was the most impressive thing that you saw?
I missed the Gonzaga game. I only saw the score.
You missed nothing.
All right, you didn't miss anything.
If you watched the other two games, you saw what they did. They pretty much did the exact same thing.
So they're at a high level.
Yeah.
I still think they're a very good team. They've definitely dominated their competition. It'll be interesting to see how they play in a tight game.
Question is, are they going to get a tight game? Like, right. I don't know if they're going to get a tight game until maybe the championship game. Maybe
at some point they will get a tight game.
Okay.
UCLA's, I mean, they caught fire.
Yeah.
I mean, they were the first four in game, play-in game, and now they're heading to the Final Four. That happens. You know, like I think we talked about it, you know, that's happened. Teams have played in the first round of, playoffs in football in the NFL, and then they end up making it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And you normally have one of those teams, not every year, but on occasion, make that run. And so this year is UCLA. I mean, they've been playing really good basketball. Great team, a complimentary basketball. I'm a man, Juzang.
Is that it? Johnny Juzang.
Yeah, it's Juzang.
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely been carrying them from an offensive standpoint. It's not just him. It's the entire team in some form or fashion finding a way to put points together. But the key for me is their defense. They play really, really solid defense. Coach Cronin is, he's done a great job. And the guys have bought in. And it's always fun when you can have teams, players that are committed to the system and go out and perform at a high level. And then you see the success now of the jubilation of being able to go to the Final Four when everyone has been committed, you know, 100% to the process.
Yeah. Do you guys think, and Katie, jump in right in here, do you think UCLA has the components? Well, I guess I'm getting ahead of myself on that, but I'll talk about what they did. Juzang was supposed to be – here's the irony for you. Juzang was supposed to be at Kentucky. That was the initial or original thing.
It started. That's where it started.
What is it about this young man that makes him so special in your eyes? Like he's I think he's ridiculously talented, and I'm wondering how Kentucky let that one slip through their hands because he's fearless, man.
But honestly, he didn't show that as much at Kentucky, but some of it was he didn't get as much playing time. He was behind Emmanuel Quickly on that team, and you see what Emmanuel Quickly's doing for Charlie's Knicks. The thing about him that impresses me is he came in with the reputation of just being a shooter, but he's much more than that. He can get to the basket. He can score from all three positions as far as, you know, from distance, from mid-range, and getting to the rim. And so thing about him, he's really improved his game from his freshman to sophomore year because – and again, we didn't see him that much when he was at Kentucky. He didn't get that much playing time, so we don't know how much he improved. But you can definitely tell there's been some improvement there. And also, to be honest with you, it looks like he grew a little bit. I think he may have grew another inch or two when he went back home. The reason his reasoning for leaving Kentucky is he was homesick. He's an L.A. kid, so supposedly he was homesick, and that's why he left. All of a sudden have this soft spot for UCLA because of Johnny Juzang, because he was a nice kid when he was here. I mean, he was nice yes sir, no sir type of guy. And then, of course, with Cronin, you know, he was on Patino's staff at one point at Louisville. And so he coached at my alma mater, Murray State, at one point. And so I have this soft spot for UCLA. But Gonzaga, man, just watching the way they execute on offense. It's beautiful basketball. It's the way basketball is supposed to be played. This guy's cutting. They're unselfish. They find the open man. You don't see selfish play. It's rare that you see them just come up, somebody just cross half court and shoot up a YOLO. They execute on the offensive end. And it's fun to watch.
But I'll make a correction, Charlie, and an apology. I said you didn't miss anything, but that is not true. What you did miss in the Gonzaga game is they started the game with three amazing defensive plays. Mm-hmm. I think it was like three, maybe even four. Steals.
They had like four turnovers early.
Back to back. And it was just like, my, so y'all going to bring that to the table as well? So offensive efficiency and understanding your defensive and your hand in the passing lane. And they do the things that they got to be a coach's dream. Like, this is what coaches across America right now are watching that and going, oh, I've got my video to show all year long to my high school team or my college team. Because this is what you want. You want a team this disciplined all the time.
I think part of that, too, and Charlie, I'd like to hear what you guys say. It's when you're recruiting kids that fit your system, not necessarily just recruiting the best kids, but kids that fit into what you want. Personality wise and game wise,
and even that takes great discipline.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it time and time again, and I'm still trying to figure it out as a coach. You know, having the right fit chemistry wise plays a big part. I mean, when you start talking about talent, overall talent, that can only get you so far, and when you don't have everyone or guys who should be doing something else thinking they should be doing what others are doing, you're going to have when you have guys who understand their roles. And the reason I say that's my girl, Mikasa Robinson. I watched her last night play, and she didn't go outside of her role from an offensive standpoint. They didn't win the game, but just the way she played the game, just goes to show you that when the ball got to her and they were sagging off of her, she didn't go and try to go one-on-one and shoot the ball. She shot the ball when the ball was being dribbled into the paint, and, you know, she was open. Those are the type of shots that you can live with as a coach, and also the type of player, because you know that she's not going to go outside of what she's comfortable doing, trying to prove a point. And when you look at the teams that are left, that's what you see. I mean, you have some guys that are ball dominant, and you need that because they're controlling the game and they're making good decisions. They're not just going for what they know, but they're making good decisions. And when you have other people who don't care about who's shooting the ball, but they care about the other things, whether it's diving on the floor for loose balls, offensive rebounds, playing defense, everyone has to buy into that. And so when you have that, and that's what you have here, these last four teams standing, not saying the other teams didn't do this, but the last four, that's what they do. I mean, all four of them, in some form or fashion, they have different styles. But when it's all said and done, they have guys who are willing to do things that everyone wants to do, or don't want to do in some form or fashion. So the chemistry is good in all these teams. And it's the same thing with the women's team as well.
Yeah. And before we move on to the women's team, I just want to make a note. Timms is his last name, I think, for Gonzaga. Timms, with the handlebar mustache.
Yeah, that dude balls, man.
He is for sure the new Christian Laettner. He is for sure. Now, you can take that however you want. If you love Christian Laettner, he's your guy. But I like him because the old saying is, it ain't bragging if you can back it up. And he backs it up, man. And I'm talking about the kisses to the stand on the dunks. And I'm like, boy, you are the new Christian Laettner. You are a villain.
He kind of reminds me of Kirk Rambis too.
Yeah. But he can ball though.
He's skilled. Oh, but the way he'll just go crash it in there, he might kill two or three people going in there for a rebound.
like I've said before on this show, he's not the most athletic dude, but man, he does things the right way. And his footwork is flawless. Like he understands what he needs to do, how to get to his spot, how to make great passes. He does everything the right way. And so, but every time he scores or dunks or something, he that little kid, I'm like, man, if you try to take that to the next level, you're going to be in so many fights. It's not even going to be
better. You'll know better.
Yeah. But anyway, that's the men's side. The women's side was a little, dare I say, controversial. We talked about, first of all, Charlie, as a coach, because I don't think we asked you this the last time we were on air, and maybe because we hadn't seen the video. At least I hadn't seen
it. It happened after we went off
the air. Yeah, after we got there. How do you feel about Kim, Coach Mulkey's comments after the game with the Baylor-UConn game? Obviously, the young lady was fouled. It was a missed call. In some aspects, I guess you can say that cost them the game. I don't know. We don't know if that's true because we don't know if she would have made the free throws or not. She may have missed them both or whatever. But nevertheless, the comments after the game were, you know, y'all saw it. I have it on steal shots. It was a foul. And she was right. But is that the right way to handle it, or how would you have handled it?
I'm sure I would have made some reference to it. Just because, I mean, that's just the nature of the game, nature of the business. We assess the game in parts, and when the part is at the end of the game and you're on the short end of the stick, I mean, you're going to bring it up, and people are going to bring it up in the media as well. And, you know, Coach Auriemma had to make comments about it as well because they brought it up to him.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure if the shoe was on the other foot, and you're going home one game from the Final Four, and it's based on, you know, not getting an opportunity to shoot free throws when there was a clear foul. But it's tough. I mean, you're gonna make comments. You just hope that the comments don't cost you $25,000 like
right. Right.
Or the NFL. But I go back to what I shared, I think, on Monday night was it was definitely a foul, but talking to some of the referees that I talked to in our association here, I've learned a lot about officiating. And I think we talked about it on the air the other night.
Yeah.
There was no official in the right position to make that call. Mm-hmm. And so they would have been guessing, which they do sometimes on some calls. But they don't want to guess, I guess, at the end of a game like that. But no one's in the right – none of them were in the right position to make that call. The young lady who was behind – the official who was behind the play was basically behind – she was behind both of, you know, the play. So she was boxed out. She wasn't at an angle to where she could see the young lady you know, moving forward and hands going forward as opposed to straight up. So she was in the right position. And then baseline, of course, wasn't in the right position to see it as well. So I just think it was just a missed call, and they were all in the wrong position to make the call.
Yeah.
It's hard because, you know, in the media, you know, we have to ask the question. But, right. Like, if you're Geno, it's like, how else are you going to answer the question? We won, move on, you know? I mean, if you're Geno, why are you going to, you know, what else are you going to say? And if you're Kim Mulkey, even though a lot of things she says I don't agree with a lot of times, I mean, in that situation, I was like, yeah, it's like, what do you expect me to say? And I'm like, if I say the wrong thing, like Charlie said, I'm gonna get hit for $25,000 or however much they hit them, because they get fined in college too. I don't think it's that much, but they do get fined. Yeah. So why would you risk getting fined? It's not gonna change anything. And so it's always that weird situation as far as covering the game and on the media side. It's like you have to ask, but what do you expect them to say?
You know, Ariyama's daughter get fined for tweeting out that was a foul against her dad. Okay. Are you allowed? Are you finding hope for that? Like, are you saying, look, what are you doing? You're allowing rides on this. What are you doing?
So who's daughter?
Oh, Gino's daughter.
Gino's daughter.
In real time. Oh, that was a foul.
Well, I mean, you know, it is what it is, but it's the truth. I mean, it's the, that's the thing. That's the thing that, you know, a lot of people that bothers me. Yes, I'm a homer, but if it's something, I mean, let's call it what it is. Yeah. And, you know, people make mistakes, but let's call it for what it is. I mean, it was a foul. So what she said is not like it's not accurate.
Right.
Even though it's against probably her dad's team, but I'm just saying it's the truth.
Yeah.
And if she's anything like her dad, she's hilarious because Gino is a funny human being. You get him off camera. I've had the chance to interact with him away from games before. He was in town for one of the PGA events that was here, and like he was standing there, and like all these people there, nobody really knew who he was. And so I went up to him. He's like, I didn't think anybody was gonna recognize him. He gave me a full interview, talked to me for a while, and really? He was hilarious. Yeah, he's a funny guy.
Kentuckians are so consumed with their own lives and their own state and basketball in their own state that they don't recognize people who are the most famous coaches of all time.
Shocking. He was just standing there.
That may be one of the weirdest stories we've ever told on this
show. There's weird ones.
Last night, South Carolina pulled their own Gonzaga. And, I mean, Texas never even got out the gate. I think I stopped watching it about 10 minutes in. Like, oh, this clear.
I didn't even get that far.
just a dominating game by them over Texas, 62-34. And then, of course, the good game for at least 2.5 quarters, as far as me, the homer here, with Stanford and Louisville. Louisville looked like they looked like they were going to pull this thing out. And then Stanford just, in that the second half of the third quarter on through, they just caught fire, man. And they reminded themselves why they were the number one overall seed in the women's tournament, and just dominated, man, that last half of the game.
Yeah, their bigs got going. Their bigs were starting to make outside shots.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, that's what we've been saying was Louisville's problem all season, was defending the bigs. And so that's what happened. And, you know, they did this good size gave them problems. But it was good to see, even though they lost, it was good to see Dana Evans have a good game, even though they lost. It's good to see her go out her last two games not playing the way she had played most of the postseason.
You know what was interesting to me in that game, that Louisville made a very concerted effort to, as a team, to crash the boards and rebound and really be aggressive in that nature, knowing that they were undersized. And that's a good strategy, but it's also a taxing one. Because if you're having to do that and bang and get it and everybody's crashing all the time, it's working, because it was working. You know, they were up by 12 at one point, 14 at one point. If it's working, you got to keep it going. Because the moment you stop doing it, because you're exposed. Because they're bigs that you, it's ironic that they, or the irony is not lost on me, that they lost every single game the exact same way.
Right.
Yeah.
The big part of it, I was just looking up her her stat line, was Ashton, was it Prechtel?
Number 11,
yeah. She came off the bench. I mean, when you come off the bench, play 16 minutes and go 6-for-6 and 3-for-3 from three.
Yeah.
You bringing that in off the bench, mainly because the main girl got hurt. I mean, yeah. Cameron Brink. And she came in, and you talk about being ready. She was ready when her number was called. She was ready.
She was ready.
That's something I'm always preaching to our guys, is you never know who's going to be the catalyst, you know, for a win. And, you know, I've seen it happen time and time again with guys who aren't, or players who aren't playing a lot, and they get their moment. And they go in and have a good game. And the thing that I admire most about number 11's play was she didn't play outside of her game. Like, she wasn't trying to do anything that she wasn't good at. And so she made buckets around the rim after penetration, and she played within the offense, stepped outside, and she knocked down her shots. And she didn't try to put it on the floor, to draw the ball to the hoop, none of that kind of stuff. She just knew her game, set screens, pick and pop, roll to the basket. And that's the kind of thing that I admire about those who coming in and playing those types of roles. She probably wouldn't have been playing very much if the Brink girl hadn't gotten hurt in some form or fashion.
Well, and to that point, Charlie, I think – It was a subtle and unexpected blessing in disguise, because I think Louisville had scouted the starting five very well. I think the game plan that Jeff had for them was solid. They seemed to have kind of slowed her down a little bit. Like, she wasn't as dominant as she's been. But with Prechtl, man, they didn't have an answer. I mean, they did not have an answer at all. And rightfully so, because how do you answer the 6'5 girl that can score inside on, like you said, on all three levels? She just was really, really, really good. And she settled them all down. Like that, I don't know if she came in at the 7-minute mark or when she came in the third quarter, but whenever she came in, it just seemed to calm everything down. And even their superstar, the other girl.
William.
She seemed to finally calm down and start playing within herself as well. And then everybody just like, oh, that's right, we're Stanford. Yeah, we can. Yeah, this is what we do. So, you know, it's
easy to calm down when you got somebody going and hitting every shot, literally.
It helps quite a bit. It helps quite a bit.
Also, give Coach Tara some credit.
Yeah.
She stayed with her.
Mm-hmm. I don't think she came out when she came in.
No, she stayed with her.
Yeah.
And that's the thing sometimes about coaching. And if you have this type of team, and I think at this point of the year, I mean, people don't care. I mean, they shouldn't care whether they're playing or not. But if someone's having success and they're at your position, you should be okay with sitting down. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the type of mindset you have to have as a team, as a group. And when the coach makes decisions, you have to be willing to live with those decisions. And I just think not bringing Brink back just because she was a starter, you know, and someone was playing really, really well at that position, this goes to show you how much trust they have in the coach.
Yeah,
and her wisdom over the years to be able to trust that she's making the right decision, and it worked, you know. And then again, she number 11 may not even play in the Final Four, you know, she may not even play, but just for that night, she was able to get them to that point. I mean, she'll get an opportunity to play, but she may not be on the floor as long as if she's not doing what she did last night, that's for sure.
That U19 team, that USA U19 team, they showed that picture.
Jeff Walls. Jesus, yeah.
Yeah, that team he coached, because Brink was on that team, Haley Van Lift, old girl at UConn. I mean, yeah, no wonder they didn't lose.
Yeah, it started to become evident why that team was so good. And by the way, I just looked it up because I just out of pure curiosity. Prechtl didn't come into the game until 3 minutes and 45 seconds left in the third quarter. That's crazy, but
which quarter?
The third quarter.
You mean they play quarter?
I knew you were doing that.
I thought that was a high school game. They play quarter.
You rascal, you!
is it 10-minute quarters?
It's 10-minute quarters, Charles.
Oh man. 10-minute quarters, and they played four of them, which equals 40 minutes, if my math is correct.
Oh, and the game only takes about an hour and a half.
Yeah, that takes off, that's for sure. It goes by quite fast, I have to admit.
NCAA committee, all that's not NCAA committee, rules committee. Could we please get men's plan quarters? Let's just start there. I'll talk about the fouls, adding the fouls later. Basketball after timeouts late in the game, so we can have more drama.
Yeah, pace yourself, Charlie. You don't want to go too fast.
I think you'll get the advance into midcourt before you'll get the quarters.
Why?
Advertising.
You know how much money they make from these TV timeouts, Charlie. Come on now.
Advertise better. The NBA does it.
The NBA is a smarter product than college basketball. We all know that.
The NBA is actually being led by people. Whereas right. You know, he's being guided by a hamster on a wheel right now. So, so the stage is set, ladies and gentlemen. The men, Gonzaga, Baylor, Houston, and UCLA, just as everyone in America predicted. and, of course, on the women's side, we have – I was going to say Gonzaga. What am I saying? We have UConn, South Carolina, Arizona, which is crashing the party clearly, and Stanford. And shout out to Arizona and South Carolina who and the women's side who will boast for the very first time two African-American women as head coaches. That is very, very cool.
Don Staley made it clear during our press conference that that was the case and that we need to get more African-American black coaches in the women's women coaches.
Well, I mean, it feels like it should be more balanced, but I'm just one man. I don't know. We're doing a lot of hinting and subtle hinting this morning. I'm maybe the morning air is clearing our thoughts a little bit, so things are being able to drop. We're dropping in these little nuggets here for the NCAA. I hope they hear us. Guys, let's do this real quick. Play a quick game. I love games. Y'all know that about me. So we'll play they will win if.
Games and pixie sticks.
I love games and pixie sticks. Those are my things. So let's start with the women's Final Four. Arizona will win if.
Now, who's Arizona playing? They're playing South Carolina?
No.
They're playing UConn, aren't they?
They play UConn. Yeah.
Well, UConn, they got to play defense, of course. I mean,
right.
Sure that UConn doesn't get easy baskets, make it tough on what's the point guard?
Beckers.
Paige Beckers, yeah.
What's her name?
Paige Beckers.
Yes, Paige. They got to make it tough on her. I know that's one of the things Bella did early. But she's still very good. But Arizona's going to have multiple young ladies step up offensively to help carry some of the load. The other night, the little point guard number two, the lefty, she carried them. They did a good job of getting her open, and she did her part.
Yeah.
They're going to need someone else to step up even more to be able to help carry some of that load because UConn's not going to allow her to just – maybe they can't stop her. I don't know. Maybe they're going to let her do it and stop everybody else. Maybe that's their goal. But Arizona has to get more people offensively involved in the scoring piece, and then they got to make sure they take care of Paige. They should make a conscious effort to make it tough on her.
They can't get they can't come into the game in awe of UConn, and that certainly happens when you're playing UConn, especially when you're playing UConn for the first time and it's in the Final Four. You can't be in awe of the situation. You got to go in there and just play ball and not worry about the name on the front of the jersey, but that's easier said than done, especially when you've got young players.
Yeah, Beckers is going to be Beckers. But you can't let Beckers and Williams and Westbrook all go off.
Right.
You got to contain somebody. And so, Gino has clearly shortened that bench all the way down. There's only that in the Baylor game, there was only six people that played. So you got to take that advantage and say, okay, if he's shortening the bench, then we maybe have to try to maybe push it a little bit, make them work a little deeper into the clock on offense, and try to tire them out a little bit. Just maybe you got to work them and hope that balance of great defense and, like you said, some people unexpectedly stepping up, that combination produces a win. And if you can keep it close, anything can happen. If you can keep it close, anything can happen. UConn wins if what?
Wins that game or wins the whole thing?
The whole thing. We're talking about the whole thing. Now, I know they got to first get past their first game. I think they handled Arizona properly, because if they don't beat you
I don't have problems with Arizona.
UConn right now. They don't need to focus on anything.
I think UConn wins it if they just play UConn ball. The Stanford kind of scares me for them. But I think UConn just wins if they just play how they play.
Yeah.
I mean, UConn has to play, and I think at this point, I mean, whoever plays their best game, you know, what they do best is going to win. And in close games, you need players to step up and make plays in these close games, defensively, whether it's defense or offense. But you need your best players to play well at the right time, making the right decisions. Sometimes it's making shots, and sometimes it's making the best pass or setting a screen for somebody to get open and executing at a high level. When you start getting to these games where everything's competitive and everyone's on the same playing field when it comes to talent-wise, it just comes down to shot making, making shots, difficult shots, open shots, and you know who's going to be the aggressor. I mean, you know, creating turnovers, hitting the glass, getting open shots in transition. Because when you have good defensive teams, you have to make get in transition to get some easy baskets every now and then, especially when it's a grind. And so, I mean, all of these teams have a chance. I think everyone's counting Arizona out because it's their first time, the coach's first time, because they're playing UConn. But at this point, I mean, it may be a blowout. I don't know. But those other three teams, UConn, South Carolina, and
Stanford.
I mean, it's a toss-up.
It really is. To your point, Charlie, and I agree, UConn, if they're just UConn, well, we say that, but I don't know if that's UConn being UConn is enough against South Carolina and Stanford. South Carolina and Stanford are really good. And I would argue that Stanford at its best. So they said a stat last night that shocked me a little bit. They said through the tournament, not including last night, Stanford had averaged 14 threes per game. Well, my God, how do you beat a team that's shooting 14 threes per game?
Especially when they're that big.
And they're that big, right.
Honestly, Stanford's been the most impressive team I've seen on the women's side of the tournament, to be honest with you.
Because if Stanford is playing their best and UConn is playing their best and South Carolina's playing their best, I mean –
I lead Stanford in that situation.
Yeah. The only one that I would say that if they're playing their best, they also need some breaks is Arizona.
Right.
And that's only because of the experience. I don't know enough about Arizona to say that they have – because the game I saw against Indiana, they were good, and you saw why they were there. But compare that to UConn, South Carolina, and Stanford, I don't know if that's really a comparison. Like, that's not probably fair. Especially the way South Carolina looked against Texas. If South Carolina's defense shows up like it did against Texas, I don't know if anybody's beating them. Well, like, they would just dog it.
I mean, we sit here talking about UConn and Stanford. The team that not scares me, but the team that I see being a problem is South Carolina.
Yeah.
Their guards played the way they played last night, shot the ball. I mean, they're very, very good. I mean, but then you have, on top of that, you got their big girls.
Boston.
Who are agile. They can get out of passing lanes. I mean, they were impressive last night.
Is she the most skilled big left? Boston? Yeah.
I mean, she's one of a couple. I mean, they got a couple of them just like her. When it comes to the way they move on the court, their agility, their hand-eye coordination. They're coordinated. They understand and know their game. I mean, I was watching them get out of passing lanes. I mean, that's just not normal for 6'3", 6'4", young lady. And they're the team that overall seems to have everything that you kind of need.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll be a tough out, just like all those other teams that we talked about, going to be a tough out. But it's going to come down to who can make the most plays. Of course, that's in a game, but who can make the most plays. And I think that's why these games are going to be really, really competitive.
Yeah.
I like Wilson for Stanford on the defensive side of the ball. When she's ready to lock down, she can lock down.
Good.
She can play on my team any day.
Yeah, she's very, very good. Very, very good. And I'll say this as well. Y'all realize the women's Final Four, the last I'd even go back to say 8 years, has been way better, in my opinion, than the men's. Like, it's not even close.
The Elite Eight games were better than the men this year.
Yeah. So I fully expect no different this year. I think the women's Final Four is a must-see TV. If you love
that. Because outside of that South Carolina-Texas game, I mean, all those games, I mean, came down to it. I mean,
they were great.
Stanford kind of got away from Louisville in the fourth quarter. But, I mean, it was still a game midway through the fourth quarter.
It's and even in the fourth quarter, you know, Dana still was trying to keep them alive.
She was hitting some crazy shots down the stretch.
She wouldn't go away. She played like the All-American that she is. Okay, on the men's side, UCLA wins if what?
They're going to play good defense to keep them in games like they did last night. We had a very good game plan. And they executed it. And I just think they're going to do what they do. If they compete on the defensive end, but I think they're going to have to work to try to get some transition baskets since they worked so hard defensively. They're going to have to work to get some transition baskets. And then their stars, of course, have to be stars. But then you're going to need one of those other guys. I think it's Javier. Number four, you're going to need number two, the big man, to step up his game.
Yeah.
And like they've done, you know, we talked about everyone. At this point, everyone's shortening the bench because you want your best players on the floor, you know, as many minutes as possible because you trust that they're going to play a certain way. You know, role guys come in and play a few minutes here and there. You hope that they can give you some good quality minutes while they're in there to give someone rest because of foul trouble or, you know, they just get rest or they're in foul trouble. And so I just think it's something that they're going to have to do. They're going to have to shoot the ball well from the outside, but also, you know, slow the game down by throwing the ball inside and making things. The one thing I admire about UCLA is they play the same way. I mean, most of these teams now are playing the same way every game. You know, they're not doing anything different to try to cover up something or whatever the case may be. I mean, they're just playing the game and they're getting great results from it.
The only thing I'd ask is somebody is going to have to help Juzang in scoring. Juzang can't be the whole offense like he pretty much was last night. They need someone else to step up and make some baskets for them.
Well, it's in my opinion, it's got to be Riley or Jaquez. I mean, one of those two have to do more. I know Riley had his hands full last night because he was trying to hold back these monsters inside. You know, so I get it. But in going forward, I think Riley's got to give him something more, you know, a little bit of something, take some of that pressure off of Juzang and help him in that regard. So what about Houston? You love Houston, Charlie.
Yeah. I mean, Houston going to be in every game just because they play hard. They shoot, they chase it, and they play defense. And so I like my man, Al Giroux. I don't think that's his first name, but I like my man Giroux. I mean, he can play for me as well. I just like the way he controls the game. He's a true point guard, meaning, you know, he's very savvy. He understands the game. Defensively, he's long, and they don't take defense lightly. Like, they're not closing out the guys without intensity. And so, and then they have complementary players. I don't know how many points they're going to score, but I do know once the ball goes up, they got dudes crashing the glass. Mm-hmm. And that's where they're going to get the hands on the ball. That's where they're going to score. They do have guys who can post up and make baskets as well. But I just like them just because they play hard all the time. They defend, and they play smart on offense.
No one under the age of 40 got that Al Giroux joke.
I mean, listen, we definitely skewed older on this one, and that happens.
But I like Charlie's Florida coming out when he says "sco." But for real, Houston is scary good because they are so good defensively and how hard they play on every single possession. You're gonna have to match their energy. Baylor's gonna be in for a long game. and I like Baylor a lot, but that game is going to be a very high energy game because you got to play every possession, chasing out every single loose ball to win that game, especially to beat Houston. You're not going to come in there and finesse and beat Houston.
And I'll even take it a step further. If you don't think that the fact that these are two Texas schools is not going to play a massive factor in this game, you don't understand Texas at all. This is an old rivalry from back in the day, Southwest Conference days, that has never gone away. And the debate of Baylor and Houston and who's better and what's the better school. Baylor has been – listen, shout out to Baylor for even being here. They have been the butt and the bane of the Texas college existence for the last 5 years because of all the things that have happened. And now for them to be in this position at this point, and so fast, really, if you think about it, it's relatively quick to turn the program around that fast. That's a massive deal. So this state is going to be on fire Saturday. That game is going to be ridiculous. And by the way, it's in Texas. So it's going to be huge. But I agree with you.
I was in Indianapolis.
Well, we don't do morning shows. I'm sorry. In our minds, it's in Texas. Okay. It's in Texas. It's Texas based.
You're in Texas.
I'm in Texas, right?
Yeah, you're there.
I'm back now, guys. I'm back. I think Houston.
Sunday scaries in your system.
Sunday scaries are wonderful. They are a wonderful company, and we appreciate them very much for all of them. I think Houston has a real problem in this game in that you said the key thing. I'm sorry, Baylor has a real problem in this game. You said the key thing. Houston is not going to stop. They are going to continue to put pressure on Baylor in every way, every shot they take, every loose ball, every rebound. They've proven that throughout this entire tournament that is their calling card. And they're going to give Baylor those fits. And can Baylor's guards continue to perform at the high level that they have, and they're going to have to help out in some of those other areas. So can they do both? That's going to be, to me, the X factor for Baylor winning this thing. Right. Now, here's the interesting part. If Baylor can get past Houston, I think they give Gonzaga all the fits they can stand.
I think both of them give Gonzaga all the fits they can stand. I mean,
yeah.
The thing about Houston is if they can get Sasson Grimes making shots from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
That opens up a lot because they're such a great offensive rebounding team. The best time to shoot threes, open threes, is off of offensive rebounds because the defense is scrambling. And if you can get those open threes, which they've gotten, you know, they've gotten some open looks anyway, with their sets. But the best time to shoot threes is off of the offensive rebounds. And they all crash the glass. So if Sasser and Grimes are shooting the ball well, which they have been this tournament, it could be a tough night for Baylor. The different style, Baylor was able to take advantage of who did they play last? Baylor.
Oh, who was it? Arkansas? No, it wasn't Arkansas. Who was it? It was well, we really are sleepy today. No, it was Baylor. Yeah, it was Arkansas.
So the last game, all they did was, because Arkansas was switching, all they did was got to a matchup they wanted to attack.
Yeah.
And they attacked it. So the guy who had the basketball didn't necessarily shoot the basketball every single time, but he made plays for others.
Right.
Houston don't play, they don't play that way. So they're going to work to keep their guards on their guards, the guys who's controlling the basketball. And so they're going to have to work to do some other things from a offensive standpoint to be able to create those opportunities for one-on-one or for driving kick opportunities that they may have. I'm talking about Baylor. So,
yeah.
But Houston, they don't switch a lot with their bigs to put those guys in those type of matchups. That's just not their style. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, how they play it out from an offensive standpoint and defensively on both sides.
What about Gonzaga? The mighty Zags.
I just think if they play, continue to play the way they're playing, they're tough out. And I'm happy. I would love to see Gonzaga win for this factor. Mark Few's been at Gonzaga for a long time. I don't know how many years. He's probably had, this is a prime example, he's probably had many opportunities to move somewhere else.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
For more money and all of that prestige at bigger universities, all the whole nine. But he's chosen to stay at Gonzaga. Do they play football there?
If they do, it's Division II.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know the football team.
Right.
They are a basketball school.
Yeah.
And I'm just happy for him to be where he is and hope that they can win it because they've been there a few times now. And it's for the small market teams, schools.
Yeah.
And to be able to compete. And for him not to lead, to go to what people would call greener pastures. That is within itself just shows me that he has a commitment to a school and he enjoys what he's doing. And he's not looking for, you know, the next big thing. And that's just been my thing the whole time, as you all know. Don't take jobs because it's what you think is a bigger school and all of that when there are, what do they call them? Traps. They're traps, you know, behind those doors that you don't know about.
Total enrollment of Gonzaga, 7,295 students. To show you comparison, one of our high schools here, Allen High School, has 7,000 students. That tells you Mark Few's commitment level to what Gonzaga is doing there.
But I also say that's a curse for schools very similar to him, because everyone thinks that they can do it. Fast.
Yeah.
Because he's at a small school, how can he do it? And a school like Wake Forest can't do it.
Nice point. Great point. Great point. By the time we get back together on Monday, there will be a women's champ. Who will it be?
I say I'm choosing South Carolina.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, I just like the way they're playing right now, and overall, I think their talent, their execution as far as their guards. As we know, you need a balanced attack, but you also need great guard play. And I think all the teams going in have that, but you also need the balance on the back end as well to be able to offset some of the things that other teams are doing. And I just think overall they're well balanced.
I think I've been going back and forth with this really this whole hour. I think I'm going to go with UConn. I like their three-headed monster on offense, led by Beckers. And I mean, you can't stop all three of them. So I'm going to go with UConn, even though I like South Carolina and I like Stanford a lot too. I think I'm going to go with UConn.
I'm going to be rooting for Arizona because I like the underdogs. I love a good underdog story. However,
who are you going to go on Bet Online with?
Well, with betonline.ag, online sports book experts, I'm going to pull a Charlie Ward here and go with Stanford because it looks better for Louisville if they get beat by the one of us is going to be right or all of us is going to be wrong come the time we hit the air on Monday. So it should be a lot of fun to talk about what happens on Monday. On that same Monday, there will be a final game. Who will be playing in that game, gentlemen?
I think everyone wants to see Bell and Gonzaga. Just because
that's what everybody wants to see. Is that who you think is going to be doing it, playing, though?
Never finish, man. I'm just saying, everyone wants to see Bell and Gonzaga. All right, but I'm not counting out Houston. I like the Cougs. I like Coach Sampson. I mean, he is a veteran coach. He knows how to coach. They're going to play the same way against regardless of who they play. So I like Houston and who's. So we got Baylor playing against
Houston.
Baylor, Houston, and
Gonzaga, UCLA.
Is there any way Gonzaga doesn't make it to that final game?
I like Gonzaga and I like Houston.
Okay. Houston and Gonzaga. That's an interesting pick. Kendrick?
Because I think pretty much what we're picking is the Baylor-Houston game. I think there's a consensus that Gonzaga is going to beat UCLA.
It's going to take an absolute miracle for UCLA to pull that game off. And they may get it. I believe in miracles.
Yeah. I lean towards Baylor just because I like their skilled players a little better than Houston's skilled players. And it's not by much.
Right.
And I like the way Houston plays. I'm just going to take Baylor just because I like their skill players just a little bit more than Houston.
Okay. Jay Billis says something to us all the time, every year, year in and out. I hear him say it, and I agree. We talk about upsets. We enjoy the upsets of the tournament. It is a fun thing to watch. But when it all comes down to the end, it's usually a chalky situation. This will be no different. It will be Baylor and Gonzaga. And we'll talk about who we think will win on Monday. So I'm going Baylor and Gonzaga as well. Just real quick, we got a couple of things because we're running out of time. I just saw Ja'Marr Chase run a 4.38 in his pro day at LSU.
Tutu ran a 4.32 yesterday.
Tutu who? Atwell?
Tutu Atwell.
Ran a what?
4.32.
Jesus.
Ran a 4.32 yesterday.
You think that'll get him in? You think that'll get him into the that won't get him in the first round though, will it?
Nah, he's too small to be in the first round.
Yeah, I was gonna say maybe it might get him in the second though.
It talk might. I mean,
4.32 guys.
Yeah.
4.32 punt returner, kick returner.
You know, he didn't return. They didn't have put him back every term very much.
Wait, what
but mean? They will in the league.
I was going to say, you don't think you're going to put a 4.3 guy in the back of the punt but return?
Des Fitzpatrick had a good 42. I can't remember what it was, but it was a good 40 for his size.
The other shocker yesterday was Justin Fields, 4.4.
Yeah.
Charlie, I've never asked you this. Do you remember your 40?
Man, I only ran a 40 one time. It's a 4.7.
You only ran a 4.7? I don't believe that.
I had strained quads.
Oh, okay.
When I ran them.
Gotcha.
And I didn't run it again because during conditioning, like that preseason conditioning.
Yeah.
We had 40s. We had 10 40s. And you had to finish all your 40s in 0.5 seconds faster than your spring 40 time. So I ran it one time, ran a 4.77. And so that meant that all my 40s had to be within 5.02.
I see what you did there.
You are definitely sneaky, Mr. Ward.
every decision that we make, there's a plan.
Work smarter, not harder.
I like it. It was an interesting debate. I'm sure we'll be having many, many more of these as college basketball wraps up here. But they've definitely been debating who the best quarterback in the draft is. And most
is a draft coming up? I can't tell by watching ESPN.
There's an underwhelming response to it right now. But yes, there's a draft coming up in the NFL. But
ESPN talked about it all day, every day.
Talk about creating a narrative. I mean, they have really hammered that thing away right in the middle of a pretty amazing tournament that is somehow it's like the lead story. It's weird. But anyway,
I wonder if it's because the tournament's on CBS and the draft is on ABC.
Well, listen, let's not get into the TV weeds on this one. I think we're breaking the fourth wall at this point. for our audience, they don't understand all these things, but he's absolutely correct. That is exactly right.
This is drop. This is drop hints day.
Welcome. Enjoy. This is how we're gonna leave March and go into April. It's been interesting. We'll have a lot to talk about with this draft, but that 4.4 yesterday from Justin Fields was probably pretty significant in the bigger picture.
So what does that mean though? From a quarterback position, what does that mean?
I think for him it means that he is because the mobile quarterback has become far more popular now, i.e. Russell Wilson, i.e. Lamar Jackson, i.e. you know, I think he suddenly is looked at differently, which I don't understand how he couldn't be looked at differently anyway, because the dude only lost 2 college games. I mean, what are we – and by the way, both of those were in the title championship. So
the toughness he showed in that Clemson game. I mean,
like, what else does this guy have to do? Like, my God, the man is – his only losses are coming in championship scenarios. So I think he's more than proven that he can play the game. So I don't know. It's weird, but I think that 4-4 means something in the sense that he fits into that mold of the elusive quarterback, which a lot of teams are still looking for. Because I, you know, people on the narrative about the pocket quarterback is shifting pretty dramatically now, because when you got linemen that are running 4.5s and 4.6s and 4.7s as well, man, this dude either better be able to get the ball out of his hands fast when he's throwing and hitting those, you know, passes, or he better be able to get out of the pocket and go make a play. And so Justin has proven he can do both. So, but I hear what you're saying, Charlie. One doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the other. You know, Mac Jones ran in and he's slow as all get out.
Whether he ran a 4.77 or a 4.4 or 5.02, if the man can read defenses, you know, manipulate the pocket, escape to be able to throw the ball or run 5 yards to keep in front of the chains, make good decisions. I mean, that's all you need. I mean, we pay attention to these numbers and all that kind of jazz about speed and, man, can a man read defenses? Can he, can he manipulate a pocket? Can he lead? I mean, all this stuff is on film. I think we overanalyze sometimes. I mean, you got to look at talent, but sometimes we overanalyze and give people, you know, credit because of stature, things that, you know, may not equate to being successful as far as quarterback or any position. You know, I mean, you got long arms and all of that, and think you're a very good defensive end, and the guy don't know how to rush the passer and hold a gap. Long arms don't mean anything.
right.
All right, my bad. I went on a soap. Got on the soap.
No. Listen, we're gonna be on that soap. Listen, just as much as our ESPN brethren have demonstrated to us, we're probably gonna be on that soapbox for most of April. So it's okay, Charlie. It's okay. With that being said, this has been fun as always. We're sponsored by BetOnline.ag. BetOnline meets all your sports book needs, so check them out, betonline.ag. Also, ebay.com. Also, now Sunday Scaries. And they're not as scary as you think. So,
They're very mellow. Sunday Scaries.
Oh my goodness. This
We always end on these.
We do. And just so you guys know, the men's tournament is in Indianapolis. It's not in Texas or Annapolis.
Or Annapolis.
Me and Charles Barkley out here jacking up the tournament all together. So y'all have a great weekend. It should be a fun weekend. And happy Easter Sunday to all of you. Happy Resurrection Sunday if you subscribe to that part as most of us, a lot of us do. But just enjoy your weekend. And by the way, I cannot wait till Sunday. This is on a personal note, because the Versus is going to happen. It's Earth, Wind, and Fire versus the Isley Brothers. And I'm here for all of that. So
here for all of that.
Yeah. My speaker's ready to go. My ribs, all that. I'm ready. I cannot wait. So
you might have a new talking noise walking around the house. It's very
powerful. This is going to be a really – really, really fun weekend, to say the least. So with that being said, y'all have a great one. We'll see you guys on Monday for Championship Monday. Yeah, Championship Monday. One shining moment. We'll have one champion and we'll crown another on Monday.
You have been listening to Believe in the ACC with Charlie Ward and Lloyd Spence. You can tune in every Tuesday and Thursday on the Believe Podcast Network, Spotify, iTunes, and everywhere podcasts can be heard. You can also watch Charlie and Lloyd on Facebook on the Noisemakers page and on YouTube on the Noise Media YouTube channel. Please like, subscribe, and follow on all our platforms. And we will keep taking you inside the ACC.